Well, this thing has come undone again. Does that snap on this thing here? There's a little holder there for it.
Right there. Right there.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I see it. This is a very awkward door.
There you go.
Oh, but it comes out.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why. You have to get one of your people to devise better arrangement than this.
There you go.
If anything happens. This is Betty Turnell speaking for the Decatur Public Library, and our guest today is Mr. Howard E. Brown, president of Richland Community College. Oh, Mr. Brown, you must have spent most of your life in or near a classroom. Did you say at the age of 6, how did you become a college president? Did you say to your mother, when I grow up, I want to be a college president?
Betty, I'm afraid that it didn't happen that way. I was actually born and raised in Springfield, Illinois. Grew up within the shadow of the Capitol building in Springfield, a few blocks from the Capitol. Came from wonderful parents. My mother had a very interesting name. Her name was Ida Arizona Sharp was her maiden name, and married my father. And my father's name was Lorenza Dow Brown. And my father was named after a very prominent Methodist missionary that came to America with the Wesley movement, John Wesley movement, for the Methodist Church, and served as a, this Lorenza Dow, served as a evangelist to the pioneers and to the Indians. And my father, somehow or other, his parents named him after that very interesting and provocative missionary to the United States. So born and raised in Springfield, and attended Springfield schools and graduated from Springfield High School in 1941, right during World War II, I got out of high school. Went to Illinois Wesleyan University to start with, and at that point in my life, Methodism had been so enthralled in my life that I was considering the Methodist ministry. And then went into the Army, was drafted, but volunteered before the draft ever got me, and served in the 104th Infantry Division in Europe, in the European Theater of War, and was in Europe a little over a year, and came out of that unwounded and unscathed, and very lucky, as a matter of fact.
Activities did you take part in when you were there?
Well, I was, as I mentioned, was in the 104th Infantry Division. It was called the Timberwolf Division. And our division commander had served in North Africa during the North Africa campaign, and his name was General Terry Allen. And it was a very exciting division. We were in the Battle of France, also in the Battle of Holland, in the Battle of Belgium, Luxembourg, and eventually wound up going through the Siegfried Line into Germany, and met the Russians on the Elbe River when the war was over.
Oh. Can you tell us anything about that historic meeting?
Well, it was a very interesting thing. As you know, the Potsdam Conference had pretty well decided what the boundaries were going to be for, and Yalta Conference had pretty well decided what the boundaries were going to be when the war was over between the Russians and the United States. So we waited on the Elbe River for about 4 weeks waiting for the Russians to take Berlin. And the way the war was going, there were thousands of German soldiers surrendering to us to try to escape the Russian troops. And it would have been very easy. I want to clarify that. That was a chance for us to have really gotten into Berlin and taken Berlin.
But Russia put pressure on us not to do that before they were able to enter.
Yes, that was arranged at, if my memory, historical memory serves me correctly, either at the Yalta Conference between President Roosevelt and Stalin to determine where those boundaries were going to be. So we waited at the Elbe River.
Well, then you returned to our country following all of this.
Yes. I returned to the United States. The war in Japan was still going on. And I happened to be lucky enough to return to the United States on the advance party for our division to San Luis Obispo, California, to prepare a camp at San Luis Obispo for the return of our division, who were going to be trained in amphibious warfare there for the invasion of Japan.
I happen to know that in college, in education, that was a very exciting time at the close of the war. I remember in my own experience that students would return with so much ambition, so many pent-up plans, and such exciting experiences that it really was a very exciting time in young people's lives, people about and ready to enter the careers and so on. Did you have that experience?
Yes, I did. I guess World War II certainly made an impression on me going in at the age of 19. I came home I decided that I wanted to teach because I had had an experience of teaching illiterates in the Army. In the company that I was in, I was the only one that had had some college experience. So the company commander asked me if I would mind taking some of the young men in our company, and this is when we were still in the United States, as a part of my basic training, and asked me if I would be interested in teaching some of these young men how to read and write. And that's how I got started teaching and got turned on with teaching. And even though I was not a trained teacher at that point, I'd been in a liberal arts college and had English and history and that sort of thing. But I found that I had a talent for teaching people. Mm-hmm. And so when I came back from World War II, I had the brand of teaching put on me pretty good. And I was married during the war, and my wife was Helen Bundy, Helen Bundy Brown now, of course, and she lived in Taylorville, in Wanico, Illinois, which is a small town just southeast of Taylorville. So Helen and I were married during the war, and she went on and finished her college while I was in the service. And then when I came back from the service, Helen taught in Bloomington, in the Bloomington school system, while I finished up my last 2 years of college.
Good. And then?
Okay. And then I graduated at Illinois State Normal University, it was called in those days, with my Bachelor of Science degree in teaching. And I went to Blue Mound. This was Helen's parents and my parents were still living. My parents were still living in Springfield, hers in Wanico. And we decided we wanted to locate somewhere near our parents. So Blue Mound was kind of an in-between place. And it's just on the southwest edge of Decatur here, about 15 miles southwest of Decatur. So we went to Blue Mound to stay a couple of years of teaching and decided that that we liked the community so well, and we stayed there 20 years. And I started as a teacher. Coached in that community, coached basketball and baseball. And while I was there, I saw the need to get a graduate degree, so I went to Colorado University at Greeley, Colorado, and finished my master's degree there. came back and later was offered the principalship of the high school. And then following that, the superintendent moved on, and I was offered the superintendency of that small school district down there. And I must say that I have the greatest of admiration for that little community. Back during the late 40s, I went there in 1948 as a teacher, and stayed until 1965. And during that time, we produced some excellent students down there. Doctors, lawyers, all kinds of professional people, and excellent farmers. And it's a marvelous community. And my wife and I, our children were born while we were there, our three children. Oldest of our children is a boy, and his name is Bill Brown. And as a matter of fact, he's a farm manager with the Citizens Bank here in Decatur. And then our next daughter, Becky, is now married to Ware Flora, and they're in the jewelry business in Decatur. And then our youngest daughter, Sally, who incidentally has a beautiful singing voice. You probably have heard her at church. She had some of the singing parts in that recent cantata, Requiem.
Yeah. Beautiful.
Yes. Well, anyway, Sally, they all graduated from college. All of my children graduated from school. And Sally went on to, she started at Illinois, came back to Millikan, got her degree from Millikan, then went to Northwestern University and finished her degree in physical therapy. And she has been a physical therapist at Memorial Hospital and has a very nice career there. Although she has a baby now, our latest grandson, Philip, she is just working part-time at the hospital. Well, that tells you a little bit about my family.
Yes, your background.
Mm-hmm. And incidentally, my wife, Helen, was a trained home economics teacher, but got interested in reading and got her master's degree in reading and taught reading and English in the Macon School District after she, let me back up just a little bit. She taught in Bloomington while I was in college. Then she taught in Decatur. She taught at Centennial here in Decatur for a while, and then taught in Macon for 20 years and has now been retired for 3 years.
Well, very good. So your whole family is oriented in a way around education.
That's correct. That's correct.
Helping people.
Yes.
Do you really enjoy administration? What was your motivation to change from classroom teaching to administration?
Well, first of all, I guess I truly can say that you can't take the teacher out of the teacher. I enjoyed teaching. In fact, when I got my master's degree, I was not interested in administration at that time. It was a matter of furthering myself in the teaching field. But I decided that, I guess like most administrators get started, the opportunity was there. Somebody asked me if I would be interested in doing it. And at that point, I just decided to give it a try and see if I would like it. And I've always, I guess, been kind of a people person and found administration very interesting. And so decided to continue with it. And I was superintendent of schools at Blue Mound for 10 years. Then the opportunity came along to the county superintendent of schools in Macon County was a good friend of mine, Mr. Bill Woodward. And Bill Woodward died in office. And I thought, well, I kind of think that might be a job that I'd be interested in. So I'd never been very active in politics before, but I decided to make the contacts to see if I could get that appointment. And it just happened that I was lucky and qualified, and the Republican Party of Macon County appointed me to fulfill Mr. Woodward's term, and then I ran on my own for office 5 times. And was elected. Only two of those 4-year terms was I opposed for office. Was very lucky there.
Now, you also were a regional superintendent. Did that come after you became county superintendent? What is the difference between these two?
All right. During the time that I was county superintendent, the laws changed in Illinois, establishing regions in the state. And all counties over 100,000 population automatically became a region of their own. And there are 57 regional offices in Illinois now, and they diluted the number by the population base of the county. There used to be a county superintendent in every county in Illinois, 102 counties, and at that time they reduced them down to 57. And that's what they have right now.
Now, you had to change then from the position as regional superintendent when you had this opportunity to become president of Richland.
Well, my interest in Richland Community College goes back a long ways. When Richland Community College was first being talked about back in the 70s, I served on the first steering committee of the college, and to help establish a community college in this area. And that was very fascinating to me. And as a matter of fact, the first time it was voted on, it failed by just a few votes. And of course, all of us who had worked on it were very disappointed with that failure. We thought it would have been a marvelous district. It was much larger in geographic scope than it is now. And so we were all disappointed in that. The steering committee decided to come back fairly rapidly after that first defeat and vote on it again, ask the people to vote on it again. And at that time chose the communities that had passed the issue the first time around, and even the second time it failed a little by a little. And of course at that time then it was dropped for a while, and then eventually it became a community college by Decatur themselves voting to form a community college district. And then part of the community college law requires that any district that was contiguous with a community college district could come into the district either voluntarily or they could petition to come in. And the districts that are now in the college district here of Richland Community College, most of those districts chose to come in by virtue of just being contiguous with the district and not going to a referendum to do it.
So that it made it a little easier to issue.
That's correct. And they did not have to go to a vote of their people to join.
Well, people really needed the education to understand the situation, and that's probably what happened, that you were able to explain the assets and the needs and so on.
I think it finally came around to the fact that people had decided that the community college idea was a good one. Mm-hmm. And that it would serve the community and its needs very well. And I guess looking back on that, Betty, I thought about applying for the presidency the first time that the college was voted in. And I enjoyed what I was doing so much and decided, maybe I better not do that. But the desire was there to have done that. I have no regrets about waiting this late to do it, but I must say that I had given it a lot of consideration but did not apply the first time the president was employed at Richland Community College.
Maybe we could give just a minute to, this is a statewide, I might say phenomenon, isn't it, of community colleges.
Yes, it is.
Do you call them junior colleges? All 4-year.
They first of all, they are all now called community colleges, with the exception of one in Illinois, and that happens to be a historical significance. Joliet is the only one, it's the first, that is the first community college in America, mm-hmm. the one at Joliet. So they still carry the junior college, Joliet Junior College, but all of the rest of the community colleges in Illinois are known as community colleges.
They do, they give a four-year degree.
No, they do not give a four-year degree. It's a two-year college, and the two-year colleges are required by the community college law in Illinois to offer various kinds of programs. And those programs are in the area of transfer credit. Fact is, a large percentage of our students who come to Richland transfer to other senior institutions for their last 2 years. And as a matter of fact, the largest number of students who graduate here at Richland Community College transfer to Millikan University. And then they go to all other colleges and universities in Illinois. We have a lot of them that go to Eastern, a lot of them that go to Illinois State at Normal, and to Sangamon State over in Springfield, and to the University of Illinois at Champaign-Urbana.
Maybe you could tell us the nature of your student body, where they come from and their needs and so on.
All right, I'd be happy to do that. As I mentioned to you before, there are certain requirements of the law on the kinds of programs that must be offered in a community college, and the transfer program is one of them. Other is a strong emphasis on vocational technical education, and a third one is a program for those that are disadvantaged educationally. And we run a tremendous program here on the General Educational Development Program, GED as it's commonly called, and this teaches all kinds of literary skills to people. And then another function of the college is a strong adult and continuing education kind of program. We offer all kinds of courses in our various communities around through the district. We have an extension center at Clinton, for instance, that we offer all kinds of courses there. We offer courses in Blue Mound and in Stonington and in Mowiqua and in Assumption and in Sierra Gorda and Iliopolis. And we offer courses in Mount Zion. We offer courses all over the area for adults and students.
Let's talk for a minute about the assets for the community. Let's say, not for someone who isn't attending, but what does Richland do for the average person in Decatur?
Well, first of all, the quality of life of our community, in my opinion, is raised considerably by having a community college. Community colleges give people an opportunity, both students and adults, a chance to further themselves in terms of their education. We have students who come, as a matter of fact, the average age of students attending a community college is about 26. And that is true here. Our average age of our students and they go into all kinds of fields, into electronics, into teaching. We have people, we have one of our students that's a lawyer now. We have one in med school. We have several CPAs that have gone here and then gone on to a senior institution to finish up their certified public accountancy. Lots of students in business that work in offices and factories and all kinds of occupational kinds of jobs. And as a matter of fact, I can foresee the time when many businesses in our community will require their workers to have an associate degree from a community college for qualifying for work in their factory or business.
So you really spread the good work not only to the students but to the businesses and the community and so on. Tell me, where do these students live?
All right, the bulk of our students, of course, with the largest population base in Decatur, most of our students come from Decatur. But a lot of our students come from our outlying districts as well, from Mount Zion, from Macon, from Mowiqua, from Assumption, from Blue Mound, from Stonington, from Iliopolis, from Clinton, up on the north end of our district, around to Cerro Gordo and Mount Zion, Moroa, all of the schools in Macon County, all the high school districts here belong to the community college. And then those on the outside of the periphery of our district, we have 14 school districts that send their students to Richland Community College.
So they have the advantages of living at home. It's not so expensive to attend a college if you can stay at home.
If you can be a commuter and commute back and forth to go to a community college to get your first 2 years in, it's much less expensive to do it that way. And we have lots of students who drive here every day. In fact, our parking lot with this temporary facility that we have here will hold about 650 cars. And there are times when it's very difficult to find a parking place here at the our temporary facility in Park 101.
While we're talking about temporary facilities, let's talk about buildings. I think the business of where the college will be housed is quite interesting. Why don't you tell us how the building program progressed?
All right. I'll first of all give you a little background. Choosing a site for this Richland Community College was a very traumatic experience for this community. As I mentioned to you before, the previous failures of the vote to establish a college here. And then it seemed as though the community got into a dispute about where the college ought to be located. So even after the college was established, the first site chosen as a temporary site was the old Milliken Bank building. And the college spent several years in that old bank building downtown Decatur. And then as the college grew and they outgrew that place pretty quickly, in the meantime, the First National Bank had bought that building and wanted to tear the building down and make a parking lot out of it. So it was necessary for the college to move into another temporary facility. Well, during that time, the Board of Trustees of the college had taken an option on a site west of Decatur called the Wilcox, in the Wilcox addition, which was a very nice site and would have been a nice site for the college. And that site was voted on by the public and failed. And failed by just, I think, maybe around 50 votes, something like that, 58 votes. Very small number. And so the establishment of the college was, as I mentioned, a long traumatic experience. And then the finding of a site that would be appropriate was a very long and tedious and frustrating thing for the Board of Trustees of the college. And then finally, the Board of Trustees bought a site for the college. They bought a site at the corner of Brush College Road and Ray's Bridge Road, and it's a 117-acre area, beautiful, beautiful spot for a college, just off the interstate. Mm-hmm. As you come off of the Route 48 exit off of the interstate, at the Orienta exit off of the interstate, it's just south of there, and will be a very nice spot for the college.
What are your plans for the campus there? Will you call it a campus? Will it be a campus?
It's a campus site, 117 acres there, and the building plans are completed now. And the architectural firm in Decatur who designed that is the Architectural and Engineering Corporation. Mr. Ernie Lohr is the chief architect for the project. And one of the very unique things about building this building that we're right in the progress of doing now here in June of 1986 was the fact that the governor of the state of Illinois, Governor James Thompson, promoted a program called Build Illinois. And this was a project by the governor to kind of stimulate the economy of Illinois. So our local representatives, and I want to give credit to those people that worked on this as a part of this historical tape, Senator James Rupp from our community here, Mr. Michael Tate, representative in the House, Mr. Sam Vinson, who is a representative from the Clinton area, and Senator Summer from up in part of our Northwest District, and Senator Maitland from Bloomington, who was some of his district was in our particular territory. And those gentlemen, and Mr. John Dunn, who was a House member here from Decatur, it's very instrumental. Mr. Dunn is a Democrat, and Mr. Vinson and Mr. Tate and Senator Rupp were Republicans. And they worked both sides of the House and the Senate in getting this issue of Build Illinois, which Richland Community College was a part of, and to get the state to participate to the tune of $15 million.
As I mentioned previously, the legislators in our general area are certainly to be commended for carrying this Build Illinois project through the legislature. I happened to be over there the day that it was finally voted and was so elated over how it all came out. And the bonds for the campus were secured, and it was one of the few projects in the Build Illinois that had anything to do with the community college. And while I'm on that topic, I must say that the Board of Trustees of the college here at that time, and I'm going to cite one particular individual that had an awful lot to do with the successful passage of that piece of legislation over in Springfield. One of our trustees, Dr. Hal Grunlin from Clinton, had very active political connections in Springfield, and was over in Springfield, spent an awful lot of time lobbying over there for this particular piece of legislation. And Mr. Sam Vinson, the House member from his district, was a floor leader for the Republican Party and the governor, and I can safely say to you that he was a big influence in keeping that project within the Build Illinois scope. Now, one of the great advantages of that was the fact that the new campus would be built all in one full swoop. Most generally, community colleges were built in three stages. You get one phase, two phase, three phases spread out over a number of years. But Build Illinois put the whole campus for Richland Community College in one project. So we will be building a 150,000 square foot first unit of our campus, which includes all of our classrooms, laboratories, lecture rooms, and the whole thing. We did not have to wait about 5 or 6 years to get all the three stages of it done. That was the real advantage of being in the Build Illinois. Although I must say to you on this tape that was a calculated risk on the part of the Board of Trustees to wrap their package up all in one piece, because Build Illinois was such a controversial political issue during the 1985-86 political year that it was a calculated risk. But it happened to turn out very fine for Richland Community College.
It's going to be a great day when you move in and get started. When do you think this will take place?
During all of this time of planning and pre-planning, the architectural firm was working on the plans of this building. As I mentioned before, will cover 150,000 square feet of classrooms, laboratories, parking, and so forth. We'll have enough parking for about 1,000 cars at this campus. That shows you the need of being a commuter college.
The other unique thing about it is that it's a prairie style of architecture. It's a very low profile kind of building. It'll have two wings of it. It's a crucible in shape, and I think that's significant to our rural kind of Illinois setting. It will be have the latest technology, computer technology, electronic technology, all the latest things. We learned an awful lot from the other community colleges that were built. And fortunately, we were able to profit by some of their mistakes. Let me give you an example. Our college will have a tremendous high R rating for energy saving. The building is constructed in a way that it actually will be less of an energy burner in terms of heat and air conditioning and lights and so forth than the present temporary facilities that we're in. We have about 57,000 square feet in this temporary facility in deference to 150,000 in the new campus, and our new campus will have a higher R rating and save more energy than we do in this building we're in right now by about 50%. Isn't that interesting?
That's great.
So that's one place that coming during the time it has. And so I'm very pleased about the design of the new campus. The groundbreaking will be held on July 16th, 1986 at 12 noon on the site where the college will be built. Governor Thompson will be flying in on that day to turn the first spade of dirt, and we are inviting the community, all the community citizens, to attend that groundbreaking. All the state dignitaries will be here, from the Community College Board of Illinois to the Board of Higher Education to our local legislators to the mayors of all the villages where the college serves and to their city councils. Every person that we can think of has gotten a written invitation, and those that don't get a written invitation are invited by the college trustees and myself to attend the groundbreaking on that day.
Well, that will really be an exciting day.
Yes, it will.
Now, in your duties as president of an organization like this, we know that you have many decisions to make. Budget, for example, must be a tremendously important part of your operation. And we, of course, we've talked about students, courses of study, buildings, and so on. Would you like to say something about your staff and faculty?
Yes, I would. I think this is a very important facet of this college. From the time the college opened, Dr. Murray Deutsch, who came to Richland back when they were located in the old Milliken Bank building, first president of the college, was a very fine leader. He hired a very excellent teaching staff. Many of those people are still with the college. They've liked Richland, they've liked our community, and they've stayed with us. And the one thing that I'm proud of with that faculty, that the students who graduate here and who transfer to other colleges and universities, senior institutions, consistently do better than the native students that are enrolled in those institutions, consistently make higher grade averages than the normal students admitted to those schools, and almost without question every semester, our students who are transferring to other senior institutions do better than other community college students who have transferred from other places in the state of Illinois. And that has to go back to some excellent dedicated teaching in our college. I'm very proud of the faculty here. We have many PhDs who teach in this school, from mathematics to chemistry to physics to computer technology. We just have a real excellent teaching faculty here. And my administrators here, I have three deans. I have a dean of student development, Mr. Wayne Knopf, who
who does an excellent job with all the registration of the college students and counseling of college students and so forth. And our dean of instruction is Mr. Bob Rose, and Bob has been with the college almost with from day one. He started out, I think, as an associate dean, and Mr. Knopf came on early with the college. And then we have our business dean, Mr. Mike Ross. Mr. Ross happens to be a trained CPA as well as having a law degree. So we've got three fine deans, and then we have department chairmen in the college who are in direct contact with the faculty on a day-to-day basis.
Well, you certainly should be congratulated on a very fine operation and a great asset to the community, and we'll all be looking forward to your new campus and wish you the very best of experiences as you move into this new phase of Richland Community College. It must be very satisfying to see your project grow and blossom as it has.
Yes, it is, Betty, and we have many other things on the drawing board for Richland. During the time that I've been here, as an example, we have established a Richland Community College Foundation, and the foundation is being chaired by Mr. Bruce Camel, who is in the real estate business here in Decatur. And the foundation has many project ideas of things for the school that they would like to see done, and so they'll be working on that. And we've got a couple of very unique situations that are kind of on the drawing boards, and making a historical tape like this, I'd want to preface these by saying that my hopes and prayers would be that they come to fruition. And let me tell you one, and I hope this will not be played for the public until after this maybe comes about. Can we have a little... promise of that? Can we have a hold on that? All right. As you may know or may not know, our campus is located 0.9 miles from the new coal generation plant, power plant that Archer Daniel Midland Company is building. We are currently talking to Archer Daniel Midland Company about them furnishing hot water for our heating and air conditioning. And if all things happen and fall in place, that should fall in place, Archer Daniel Midland Company will furnish the heat and air conditioning, hot water, it's all done through a hot water system, for the college for free for a 10-year period.
Oh, amazing.
And during that time, if at any time during that particular period of time, if Archer Daniel Midland needs to change and cannot furnish that for us, they will replace all of the equipment in our building necessary for us to continue to heat and air condition our building within a 10-year period. After 10 years, under the current agreement, if it comes to fruition, and I will say at this point that it's always problematical whether all the pieces will come together or not. But if they do, after 10 years, then they will furnish hot water to us at their cost.
Well, that's just an example of another way in which a community college like this works together with the community. It's really a very striking example of how the whole group can work together.
That's correct.
For the good of the community.
That's correct. I guess you might say that putting the community in capital letters, community college, is the best way to describe it. To work with the local citizenry, to work with the schools in our area. We have many courses that are taught here this summer, for instance. During summer school of 1986, we have many students from that attend colleges all over the country that are taking courses here to transfer back to their regular college. Come and take a course or two, transfer it back to their college.
Well, it all sounds very exciting, and And I know that you are a very busy person, but you can't spend all your time in your office, Mr. Brown. We know, for example, that you have a beautiful singing voice and that you have contributed a great deal by means of your singing to the community. When did you start? Did you ever think of singing as a career?
Well, as a matter of fact, yes, I did. I got started singing as a young person in high school. My mother was a very musical person and wanted me to take voice lessons and insisted that I take voice lessons when I was in high school. At the time I was doing that, I was not all that enthusiastic about it, to be honest with you. But she insisted, and there were a few things that I wanted to do in life, like playing athletic teams and so forth in high school. And she said, "Howard, if you're gonna do that, you're gonna have to continue your voice lessons." So she held that over my head, and I have been eternally grateful to her for that. A loving mother who saw that music could be a real lifetime enjoyment. So I have sung practically all of my life. Sang in my home church choir in Springfield at the Coomler Methodist Church when I was a junior choir and senior choir. And then I always enjoyed entertaining, I guess, when I was in the service. I sang with the R Division Band. I sang on several occasions when Hollywood stars would come to our camp to entertain. Red Skelton, for instance, had a show at our camp once, and I sang with the band, sang a couple of numbers with the band during that outing. And the Bob Hope Show came to one of our camps one time, and I sang a couple of numbers with the band. So I was pretty close to the entertaining business and never really struck out in that area to make a career of it. But singing has been a continual enjoyment of mine. And since that time, I have sung a lot for summer when the choirs and a lot of the churches are off on vacation. I have done a lot of singing for various churches in town. And have also sung on lots of public occasions. If I had a dollar for every time that I have sung the national anthem or God Bless America at public events, I would be a millionaire. I have done that so much and have enjoyed every bit of it. And it's been real fun for me.
Well, certainly the people of Decatur have enjoyed it too. Now, I know that, happen to know that you are a member of the First United Methodist Church in Decatur. Maybe you could tell us something about your association with that church.
Well, I'd be happy to. I'd like to go back a little bit with Methodism, if I may. As I mentioned in the earlier part of this tape, that the Methodist Church had made a real impact on my life. The reason I went to Wesleyan University to start with was because of the influence of our Methodist Church in Springfield. But and then having my family so steeped in the Methodist tradition, we lived in Blue Mound. Of course, we were active in the Blue Mound Methodist Church there and was a Sunday school superintendent there. Taught Sunday school classes in the Sunday school. I even, as an adult, taught first grade children as a Sunday school class one time there. And then I was a licensed lay speaker for the Methodist Church. And kind of an interesting story, when we decided to move to Decatur after I had been elected county superintendent of schools then, one of my daughter's friends, my daughter Becky, our oldest daughter, friends sang in the First United Methodist Church high school choir. And they had a marvelous choir there. And my daughter, who is a singer, in fact, my whole
musical families, very musical. Both my daughters and my son has a nice voice. He doesn't use it and doesn't sing, but he does have a nice voice. But my daughters have it, don't sing. And so this young girl by the name of Susie Brown invited my daughter, Becky, to sing in the choir at First United Methodist Church. So that drew us to that church. And the first Sunday we came and saw our daughter sing in the choir, they had some music. It's the most exceptional I've ever heard. Then or since. Where we were going to go to church, it was going to be First United Methodist Church. And we have made so many fine friends there, and have so many fine acquaintances. Even Betty Turnell goes to First United Methodist Church, even though I don't think we had maybe formally met before. If we have, it's been in passing. And I think you would agree with me, it's a fine congregation, and for a big church, is very friendly and cordial, and invite people into the arms of the church openly as newcomers come on.
And a great building, a beautiful building, and the location was an issue at one time, I understand, whether they would remain in that downtown area. What do you think of the decision to stay there?
Well, of course, I think First United Methodist Church is a downtown church located in an ideal spot for a downtown denomination. And there was some talk at one time about maybe it was kind of foolish to maintain a big building like we have there, but it is a beautiful sanctuary. And in future years, we're going to pay the price in terms of keeping it up all the time and keeping it in good shape. But our old gas school was located right across the street on North Street there, church and North. And the church several years ago bought that, tore down old gas school, and made a new parking lot for the church. There were some members of the congregation thought that to be a little bit foolish. But I think in years to come, the church will be very pleased that they made that move. Well, I guess I have to brag on Decatur a little bit. During the years of 1985-86, there has been a real downturn in the economy for us. We've been a very highly industrial kind of town with Caterpillar and Firestone and Staley Company and Mueller Company and many other fine companies that were located here. Fort Warner, Pittsburgh Plate Glass, and Mount Zion. And with the downturn in the economy during these years, we've suffered a lot here. And I think that our church and our community have opened their arms to try to help the community through this period. For instance, as you mentioned, our church has had one of the big food pantries in town to help people. We have also had the Good Samaritan Inn that was started really by one of our associate pastors of our church who feed at least one warm meal a day to people who are needed. And that's been a very rewarding experience for our congregation. And I guess I can't hardly speak about Decatur without talking a little bit about some of the organizations that I belong to. I don't know whether, Betty, that would be appropriate or not. Okay. Well, first of all, I've served on about every major board in this town. I've been president of Rotary Club, been in Rotary for well over 20 years now, and served as president of the Decatur Club. In fact, previously I was a member of Rotary in Blue Mountain before we moved to Decatur. Been on the Salvation Army Board, the United Way Board, President of the United Way Board, on the Chamber of Commerce Board, President of that board. I have served as the President of the Mental Health Association of Decatur, member of the Ansar Shrine and the Masonic Lodge. I've served on the committee, a relatively new committee in our community that deals with the whole business of children born with handicap. It's called the Early Childhood Registry, and it's a registry that tries to counsel with and help young parents who are in the process of having a child to be sure that the proper nutrition takes place. Kind of following those children to be sure that if a child is born as a handicapped child, that we can line them up with the kind of community services that will be available for them. I guess my professional career and my career in the community has been a very rewarding one, very interesting for me, and met a lot of people, know a lot of people in our community, and have lots of friends, and I guess that's what makes for a good community. Thank you very much, Betty, and in fact, I want to extend a personal invitation to you to attend the groundbreaking of the college on July 16th. It's on a Wednesday, and it'll be at noon, and hope that you can be there for this great occasion.
Thank you very much.